Happy Friday, everyone, and thank you to all of you who are supporting Into the Word financially. I appreciate that. We can't stay on the air without that assistance. If there's anyone that would like to help in that effort, it's easy enough to do. Just write down the contact information you'll hear after today's airing, and then send your one-time or ongoing gift of any amount to that address, and it'll be applied to the radio broadcast fees. Fridays, I urge all of you, as believers in Jesus Christ, to have a home congregation. You need a place where you are regularly gathering in the assembly of saints for worship and fellowship and prayer and praise and study and service and the encouragement to love and good deeds. If you don't have a place like that, you need to go out and find one ASAP. Get plugged in there, stay plugged in there. Now, if you are actively looking right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, I'd invite you to come on over, check us out, see if maybe we're the place you'll settle down. We are in Genesis chapter number 30, and we are in the midst of this baby contest, for lack of any other phrase, where Jacob ended up marrying two sisters. Now, he really only wanted to marry the younger one, but what goes around comes around, and he got tricked, got over a barrel. And in order for him to get the love of his life, he had to stay in the marriage with her older sister, or at least that's what he thought. And both women now have conjugal rights with him. They have the right to have sexual relations on a regular basis with the intention of getting pregnant and having children. And so starting in that first year of their marriage, Leah, the elder sister, started having children. And she's having them pretty much every 11 months. I would suggest to you that more than likely she's aware that nursing a newborn has a tendency to depress the return to your cycle. And so she's probably handing her newborns off to her right-hand servant and saying, here, you nurse this one. I'm going to try to get pregnant with another one. And so this is what we have. We have Reuben is the first one born to her. His name means, see, a son. And that was her way of trying to get Jacob's attention to the fact that she was the one bearing him an heir. Then her next one comes along, and that's Shimon, or heard, or listens. Because she felt that God was listening to her from being mistreated by being the unloved wife. Then she has a third boy, probably in the third year of the marriage. She names him Lewi, or we usually say in English Levi, which means attachment, because she was hoping by now, with three boys, that Jacob would be attached to her. Then, at that point, Rachel gets upset, and she decides to go the surrogacy route. So she insists that Jacob get her surrogate maid, Bilhah, pregnant. Well, Leah has her fourth baby and names him Judah, which means praise. And very shortly after that, Bilhah has her baby, and Rachel, who of course is the official wife, orders or arranges for the child to be named Dan, which means judgment, because she felt that God was judging in her favor now. So that's all within the fourth year of marriage, understand, that we've got five boys already. Then in the next year, Rachel has Jacob impregnate Zilpah a second time. And she has a baby, and Rachel names him Naphtali. which has to do with struggling. She felt like maybe she was going to win this struggle with her sister. Then Leah decides that she's not getting pregnant, so she can't let her sister catch up with her. So she insists that Jacob impregnate her surrogate assistant maid, Zilpah. And so Zilpah has a baby boy, and Leah names him Gad, which has to do with good fortune, because she felt like everything was back on track again. The next year, at some point, little Reuben, who's only about 3 years old, brings his mother some pretty flowers. And Rachel wanted... let's see here. Got to make sure we get this right. Leah allowed Rachel to have the mandrakes, which were the pretty flowers, as long as she could have Rachel's night with Jacob. And so she says that she basically hired Jacob for the night. And I told you at the time, this shows you how ridiculously sad Jacob's situation is. And any man that seems to think that he has a good time with four different women, they don't understand what's going on here. So Zilpah has another baby at this point for Leah, and Leah names him Asher, which means happy. Leah has a baby named Issachar, and then she has a baby named Zebulun. And then the following year after that, apparently, we have a little girl named Dinah. That's to Leah. And then finally, and this is where we wrapped up last time, but I wanted to have a little summary of it. Joseph is born to Rachel. And Rachel names him Joseph because she was hoping that God would keep adding to her, because that's what Joseph's name means, is to be added. And that's son number 11. And in 6 years, then, we have 11 boys and one girl. So now, as the seventh year wraps up, and Jacob is able to kind of say, well, I've finished my contract, he is a dad with 12 kids and four women. And all those kids are under the age of six. They're six and down. And one of them is pretty much a newborn. Imagine what that must have been like. So with that in mind, let's pick the story up. Genesis 30, 25. As soon as Rachel had born Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children," meaning release me from the debt. Because remember, he gave 7 years prior to the marriage so that he could have Rachel as his wife. That's 7 years worth of work as a dowry for her. And I told you at the time, that's many hundreds of thousands of dollars in buying power. Then he got tricked, and so he agreed to work for another 7 years to pay off a second dowry, so another hundreds of thousands of dollars of work effort as a dowry. And so now he's saying, I have paid my debt in full. I want to leave. You have to release me and my wives and my kids from any type of allegiance to you. Verse 26 again. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, that I may go, for you know the service that I have given you. But Laban said to him, if I found favor in your sight, I've learned by divination that he who is has blessed me because of you. Now, this is a little interesting tidbit to file away for later. Apparently, Laban, the third generation of the Nahor family. It'd be Terah, who was the father of Abraham and Nahor. And then after Nahor, we have Beth. Oh my goodness, I all of a sudden have a blank on my head for his name. Bethuel, there we go. Bethuel, and Bethuel had Rebekah, who got married to Isaac, and a son named Laban. This is him. So he's the third generation in the Nahor clan. The previous generations from Terah and Nahor and Bethuel, they believed in the one true God. They believed in the Creator God. They apparently had embraced the faith that Abraham had embraced and introduced to them. Laban, though, is playing around with other gods and goddesses. And he's tapping into the spirit world, using little idols and things in order to figure out how to get things beneficial to himself. And so he tells Jacob, in my fiddling around in the spirit world, I understand that your God, the God that you serve, he's blessing you, and that's overflowing on me. So what's his point? He says, I don't want to let you leave. I'd like you to stick around here so I can get more of that overflow blessing. And we all understand that because we know that this is the Abrahamic blessing. God said, I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. And so throughout the stories of Abraham, Isaac, and now Jacob, that's exactly what we've been seeing. So Laban says, name your wages, I'll give it. So he says, you got a blank check. You tell me what you want to be paid, and I'll pay it if you'll just stick around and let me get the overflow blessings. Now, Jacob is now presented with something to think seriously about, and I want you to think about it with me. When he came 14 years earlier, as an apparent penalty from his father, he came only with the clothes on his back, the staff in his hand, the sandals on his feet, maybe a little bag of supplies. Nothing else. Even though he was the heir of Yitzhak, he had nothing. That's why he had to spend those years working in order to pay the dowry, or dowries, we should say. So he hasn't had the opportunity to put any money away. He's not been getting paid anything extra. Every bit of his work product has paid for the dowries. So here he is. He is a man with four women and 11 kids, 12 kids, 11 boys, one girl, to feed and take care of, and he has zip. He has nothing, no savings, no property, nothing. He's still only got the staff, the clothes, and whatever supplies he and his family members might be able to carry. And remember, his kids are all six and under. So now, it dawns on him, I think, well, if I stick around a little bit longer, I can build up a nest egg. I can take care of my family and build up some extra. And then I don't have to go home looking poor to face my brother and my mom and my dad. Now remember, mom had told him, you stay up there until I tell you to come home. And the whole idea was that dad was going to die soon, and then Esau was going to need some cooling off period to quit being mad at Jacob. And so apparently, mom has not told him it's safe to come home yet after 14 years because dad hasn't died. So he decides maybe the best thing is for me to stick around here a little bit longer. Verse 29. So Jacob said to himself, you yourself or said to him, "You yourself know how I served you and how your livestock has fared with me." So that's been his job the last 7 years, is taking care of Laban's animals, and Laban's animals have prospered. Everything has been great. Verse 30, "For you had little before I came, and it has increased abundantly." Now that's some more information than we knew before. When he arrived, we know that he met Rachel out by the well, and she was taking care of a flock of sheep. And that may have been the extent of their holdings. But that's now changed. Laban has tons of animals now. "He who is has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" He said, "Well, what shall I give you?" And Jacob said, "You're not going to give me anything. If you will just do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it." So this is the deal. You're not going to pay me like silver for this. I want animal stock. And if you'll agree to this, then I'll take care of your animals. So verse 32, "Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep and every black lamb and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and they shall be my wages." All right, so he says, this is the deal. We're going to go through and we're going to take out all the off-colored animals. Now, the sheep in this area of the world at this time tended to be, white or beige or whatever you want to call that wool when it's been out there in the weather. But it was singular color. And then the goats tended to be black. So what he's basically saying is, I will take care of your animals, but your animals are going to be the mainstream colors. Anything that is thrown outside of those parameters will automatically belong to me. That's the deal. And so my honesty will answer for me later when you come to look into my wages with you. Everyone that is not speckled or spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, shall be counted stolen. So that's his point in doing this. And it may be, by the way, that God helped him come to this understanding. We'll later find out that God speaks to him in some dreams or visions to help him build up his own property. So the goal is, everything that is unusual in color, those belong to Jacob. Everything else, the ones that are normally colored, those are Laban's, and it'll be easy to separate them. Now, in verse 35, there's a little bit of debate that comes up here, but first, verse 34, "Laban said, 'Good, let it be as you have said.'" So in verse 35, it says, "That day Laban removed the male goats that were striped and spotted, and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white on it, and every lamb that was black, and put them in the charge of his sons. And he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob pastured the rest of Laban's flock." Now, some people believe that he was trying to cheat Jacob from the get-go. That basically he understood that animals very often throw colors similar to themselves. So if you got spotted with spotted, you're probably going to get spotted. If you got striped with striped, you're probably going to get striped. So some basic understanding of inherited genetic patterns. So some people thought that he was basically trying to keep Jacob from starting his own flock with these animals. I suppose that's possible. But I think it's also possible that this was the beginning of the let's be clear, which one is my flock, which one is your flock. And so Jacob is going to be taking care of Laban's flock, which is going to be all white sheep and all black goats. And so all of the odd-colored ones are removed 3 days away by and to be kept by Laban's boys as part of Jacob's eventual flock. Now, Jacob's boys are not old enough yet to really start taking care of the animals. They are six and under. So Laban's sons taking care of Jacob's flocks makes good sense. Later, his boys will get old enough that they can start helping in that, I think. Now, verse 37. This is the next thing that's a big controversy for a lot of people. It says, Jacob took fresh sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees. A plane tree is a sycamore tree. And peeled white streaks in them, exposing the white of the sticks. And you can picture this pretty easy. Just think of a stick, a freshly picked stick off of a tree. If you scuff at it or take your knife to it and you peel that outer bark off, no matter what color that outer bark is, the inside is going to be lighter in color. So that's what he's doing. He's taking these tree branches and he's peeling them so that they've got white stripes on them. And then he set these sticks that he'd peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, the water troughs, where they would meet to drink each day. That is the watering places where the flocks came to drink. And since they bred when they came to drink, the flocks bred in front of the sticks, and so the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. Now there is a long-standing old wives' tales or old farmer's tale called impression. So that if your animals see something, they might be impressed by it so much that it affects their offspring. And so the idea that is indicated here is that Jacob is using superstition. Unless, of course, you take in consideration that elsewhere, Jacob says that God talked to him about the breeding process. And so God may have given him these instructions as a mechanism of faith. That is, Jacob, do this, and this will happen. Trust me. And so I think that's actually what takes place here. I don't think he's tapping into superstition of the time period. I think he's actually following through with what God told him to do. And so Jacob separated the lambs, and he set the faces of the flocks toward the striped and all the black in the flock of Laban. He put his own droves apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. So he's taking any of the newborns that are his color and keeping them in separate flocks. And of course, you know what's going to happen is that they're going to breed amongst themselves, and so those particular characteristics are going to keep being brought out. Now, of course, Jacob is going to be honest about this. If he does have an all-black goat that's born, well, he has to take that to Laban's flock. If he has an all-white lamb that's born, he has to put that in Laban's flock. But he's going to keep doing this over and over again, building up his own stock while still taking care of Laban's stock. Now, he does some more things. Verse 41, whenever the stronger of the flock were breeding, Jacob would lay the sticks in the troughs before the eyes of the flock that they might breed among the sticks. But for the feebler of the flock, he would not lay them there. So the feebler would be Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. So he's not just simply going for color patterns, which are important. He's also going for overall health and build. If they are stronger, that's the ones that he wants to have speckled and striped babies. So that's when he puts the representative samples in front of them. And so this goes on for 6 years. And verse 43 reports, "Thus the man increased greatly and had large flocks, female servants and male servants, and camels and donkeys." So it works so well, starting with the pretty large flock and the flocks of the goats and the sheep of Laban, that he not only builds up a large number of animals for himself, he has enough excess that he can sell that excess off on the open market and use the silver that he receives to start hiring employees. So he hires both female servants and male servants, you know, to take care of the tent city and to take care of the animals. And he's hiring camels, not hiring, but buying camels, and he starts breeding those. He starts buying donkeys and breeding those. And so after 6 years of that, he is exceptionally well situated now. He is a very wealthy man. In fact, he's more wealthy than Laban. And that is where chapter 31 tells us that Laban's sons start getting upset. Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, "Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he's gained all this wealth." So they start getting mad because they're seeing their inheritance, they think, being stolen by Jacob. Now, of course, it's not. It's God transferring the wealth through blessing into the hands of Jacob. Well, we're out of time, so mark your place there. Have a great weekend, a great Lord's Day. I'll see you the next time we get into the Word.